Hey, everybody. I am Kim Yarts, and I am here with my colleague and friend, Jennifer Chevalier. And we are back for another episode of Change Starts Here Research Conversations. So welcome to all of our listeners. And hello, Jennifer.
Hey, Kim.
So today we are talking about what we can do to systematize high expectations for all learners. Like I just said to Jennifer, I'm so excited about this topic. So as I thought about this topic, it started me traveling down this path of my own journey as a learner. And I found myself thinking back on times when I was empowered by my teachers, like those times when I felt that feeling like my teacher really believes in me. And the thing that I was reminded of was a time when I was in fifth grade. My school had this thing called a storytelling contest. And the thing that you have to know about me when I was in fifth grade is that I was painfully shy. But I was so intrigued by the storytelling contest, which was basically you had to memorize a book and then stand up and recite it. And the more dramatic it was or animated it was, you know, the better you did in the competition. And so my teacher presented this to me, and it was like, I was like, I want to do this. And she made me feel like, you got this, you can do this. And then there were these levels of competition, and I won my classroom competition, which meant that, and it was my teacher who picked me. So that was a real clear message. You did great. You know, I believe in you. And so then I went to a school level competition, and I won it, and I got to recite my story at the county level, and I came in second place. And so for somebody who was painfully shy, that was deeply empowering.
Whoa, Kim, but wait a minute. I have a lot of questions, and I feel like our audience is going to have the same question. So you memorized a book? Like, how long is this book?
It was, it was a picture book. It was, mostly kids were, memorizing like Aesop fables and so the book that I memorized was about a bear. That much I remember. I don't remember the whole, gist of the story, but it was pages. I mean, it was a few pages.
Wow, that's really impressive. I don't know if I could even do that, let alone stand up and then perform in front of other people. So I'm really impressed by that.
We couldn't do it today, trust me.
What I was thinking about when you were talking about when you feel empowered by someone, I was thinking about this time in high school. We had this really unique competition that happened every year in our school, and I'm gonna assimilate it to like a Broadway musical. And half of the students would go on the orange team, and half of the students would go on the blue team. Those were our school colors. And each team would create a musical performance around some kind of kids' story or Broadway show or something, and infuse all kinds of singing and then all forms of dancing, including gymnastics. And it was really unique. I've never seen it done anywhere else. And in our area, the blue team had not won the gymnastics competition in 26 straight years. Orange gymnastics had always won. I know, right? That's some record to hold. And I am no gymnast. I always wanted to be a gymnast when I was a kid. And I remember going to the YMCA when I was like six, and then coach just looked at my mom and was like, don't bring her back. She does not bend. Okay. So not a gymnast. But I was a junior in high school, and I remember this teacher coming up to me and saying, that blue gymnastics squad needs a leader. And I was like, whoa, yeah. I mean, gymnastics is cool, and it is so cool. But like, I'm not a gymnast. At best, I can do a leaping somersault. I mean, and the teacher just looked at me and said, they don't need a gymnast. They need a leader. And I was like, oh. So that just instilled some kind of confidence in me. And I approached the captain, who was a gymnast, and asked about being co-captain. And we won that year, the first time after 26 years of consecutive losses that the Blue Gymnastics squad won.
All right. So I have a follow-up question for you. And that is, with regard to expectations, what shifted in you, or what do you think, what stands out to you with regard to high expectations?
I don't think I had recognized that clearly, the leadership skills that I held. And I also think I was pigeonholing myself into my capabilities in the different dance realms and gymnastics. I just had really never thought about participating because I don't bend, so it's not my strength. And so just that seeing that potential in me that I didn't see in myself, I think is what really enabled me to take a shot at it.
All right. Wow. That is really interesting. And do you feel like in your example that the expectations were for all of the students? Like, do you feel like, or do you think it was directed at you or to some students, or was it everybody?
That particular example was definitely unique to me. And, you know, that probably resonated more. If it was more of a blanket statement to the whole class or a whole group of people, I would have been like, yeah. But it was very unique to me. How about for you?
I felt like it was for all students. I mean, the floor was open for anybody and everybody to participate. However, I do feel like, you know, as I describe myself as being painfully shy, I think that my teacher believed in me and she communicated that to me throughout that. So, and you know, it's so long ago now, I can't say if she communicated that same thing to everybody, but she definitely saw something in me and helped me to see it in myself.
I love that. And I think the purpose of us sharing these experiences, Kim, is that we're talking about high expectations for all learners today. So why don't we take a moment to clarify what we mean when we talk about high expectations? Do you want to start us off?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I think it's embedded within that example, or both of those examples. It's believing in a student's potential so much that they can see their own potential. You know, I think it's believing that the greatest possible outcomes are achievable by anybody, and communicating that. That's what I'm thinking about when I think about high expectations. Do you have anything that's to add on to that, or, you know, to elaborate?
Sure. I always think of Carol Dweck's work on growth mindset in this area, because her idea, the core idea, is that people often live up to, or unfortunately down to, the expectations set for them by someone that they admire, or someone who's a role model, like a boss or a teacher. And just with a sample size of one, me, I can say that I have experienced this from both sides, me living up to or down to someone's expectations, and someone living up to or down to my expectations of them. And it makes me think of that movie Dangerous Minds. I think, gosh, was that back in the 80s or 90s, with Michelle Pfeiffer, and she was in an inner city school and trying traditional instructional methods that didn't work. And she, instead of just giving up and just saying, oh, these kids can't handle it, she came at it in a totally different way and really unveiled their potential and their worth.
You know, and you saying that too, that also reminds me of Hattie's work. You know, his work has found that there are huge effect sizes. The effect sizes of teachers' estimates of student achievement, you know, the way in which students perceive that a student believes, that a teacher believes in them, and collective efficacy, you know, the collective belief in students' ability. All three of those things have huge effect sizes on students' achievements. So, I mean, so when we're talking about expectations, those teachers' beliefs and what is communicated and heard by students, I think when I define student expectations, That's where my head goes.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I think it's not just unique to students, right? It can be in the educational setting, our staff, our families. We can have high expectations for everyone, and we should.
You know, it's easy to say this. However, sometimes, you know, things get in the way of our best intentions, right? So when you think about our listening audience and back to your own time as an educator, what were some of the barriers, or are some of the barriers, would you say, of having high expectations for all learners?
You know, I think the main thing that comes to my mind, Kim, and I'll be curious to hear how you answer this question in a minute, but it's the unintentional biases that we carry, you know, everything from a teacher's experience with a student's older sibling or family member to the family's economic status. We know racial and cultural stereotypes exist, students' attitudes or behaviors, and even a teacher's perception of him or herself. Like, I can't teach those kids or that type of kid. Those things can all get in the way. I read an article recently by the Fordham Institute, and they were talking about how many students are contending with these massive learning losses and emotional trauma post-pandemic. And that, you know, us caring adults in the field of education and just in our communities, we can often be inclined, even in like subtle ways, to lower the bar and lower the expectations to shield students from challenging work. And it makes me think of that mentality I hear in the South, like the bless your heart. Like, this kid, you're like, oh, you're doing such a great job. And oh, bless your heart to the kid that's not achieving as well. So that's what comes to my mind first. What about for you, Kim? What barriers do you see to high expectations for all?
100% on the same pathway as you. But I also was thinking about systems. And there are systems in place that other students, you know, quote unquote, other students, you know, so if there is a tracking system in place and it's high, medium, and low, those are still very prevalent in our schools. And, you know, if you're on the lowest track, then it automatically communicates to students, we don't believe in you. And, you know, I feel concerned about their motivation. Those students' motivation, we students rise to where we set the bar. And I'm concerned that, you know, that could be a barrier to students achieving their greatest potential because they are receiving a message about where they are. I think sometimes too curriculum can be a barrier to communicating high expectations. Sometimes, you know, I saw it with my own kids. You know, I had one child who was in the highest achieving group and my other student was in the average group. My high achiever, I mean, his curriculum invited him to get up and do presentations, to plan with groups, to, you know, just do a lot of really highly engaging work. I was really super impressed with what he was doing, but meanwhile, I had this kid in the average group and he was doing a lot of completing worksheets. And it was very, you know, the expectations were very different and it seemed like it was baked into the curriculums that they were using.
That really resonates with me, Kim, you know, from a systems perspective, and that's kind of where we're headed with this section of the podcast here this season. You know, the systems level thinking around just improving outcomes for everybody. We do need to be mindful of some of the unexpected, unanticipated outcomes of some of our systems. I know we always start them with best intentions, but sometimes we can't foresee how the systems will ultimately impact our staff or our students. And so I just love that thinking. Let's just push that a little bit further. When we think about this from an educational leader's perspective, what do you think leaders can do to navigate these roadblocks to increase synergy and ensure that high expectations are universal for all students and all staff?
So there is something that's kind of like near and dear to my heart, and that is being mindful of the language that we use with students, right? So I think that there are lots of times when we say, believe one thing, but say another. Like, we want to believe that we believe in all students, but yet we will sometimes say, you know, Tommy, why don't you come sit up here in the front row of this assembly, you know, when we know that, you know, Tommy has been known to have some bad behavior. So what are we saying to him in our language with that? We're saying, I expect that you're going to misbehave. And we have inadvertently, like, our intention is good. Like, we want to keep things moving along. And, you know, if we shift our language to, you know, maybe giving him a leadership role or, you know, empowering him in some way, it could shift, you know. So there are some empowering practices that we could shift to, you know, help to communicate that we believe in you. I believe in you. And I expect that you're going to do your best and be your best in every situation. And so I think that's a paradigm shift for as an educator. In fact, I think it's a paradigm shift as a parent, as a person, to shift to that. You know, I think sometimes our fears stand in the way of, you know, what we're communicating to students.
That's such a great point. You know, it often starts with how we see things and how we interpret things. And so looking at it from that paradigm lens is really important. And, you know, what I think of at the systems level here is we often perpetuate biases. And again, unintentionally, we always have the best intentions. But you mentioned tracking in academics in the middle school, in the high school level. And, you know, that can really create barriers to kids beyond graduation because of the level of coursework that they're doing. Another thing that comes to mind is a district I used to work in. I'm sure they don't do this anymore, but back when I was a classroom teacher, they had at the elementary school level, pink and blue cards. And as you finish, like, let's say I was a fourth grade teacher, at the end of the year, I would have a blue card for every boy that was in my class, a pink card for every girl that was in my class, and you would write information for the next teacher. And it would be everything from test scores to behavior problems, special notes, you know, who they should or shouldn't be in the same class with the next year. And this was all designed to increase communication so that we could support kids better. And the administrators would use the cards and kind of shuffle kids around so that they were mixed in with different kids each year. But unfortunately, one of the unintended outcomes was a lot of bias was created, right? You'd get this card and be like, sit this kid right in front of your desk. You know, those types of things. And I hated those messages because anyone can change. And just because somebody didn't behave well in one class doesn't mean they wouldn't behave well in another class. So I never liked that practice. And I do think it ultimately, even though it was well-intended, led to biases. But when I think about, you talked about paradigms, let's talk about practices here that can help us overcome some of these barriers. I was reading an article in ASCD by Fisher and Fry, and two things that they recommended that we can all do and do pretty easily. One is create a safe environment so that every person, staff and students, feel that sense of belonging and feel valued for who they are and not what they do. That is just a huge step that we can take to really help remove this barrier. And the other thing is setting goals and monitoring individual progress. So not every person has the same goal, right? We're all at different starting points, but setting rigorous goals for each person that would move them as far forward as possible, and then helping each person monitor their progress towards that goal says to every person, I believe in you. I believe you can grow and improve. This is, you know, the thing for teachers as it is for students. So I just think those are a couple of great practices that we can include Is there anything you wanted to add to that, Kim?
I love that. And I agree with you. I think culture is everything. Having a culture of high expectation is everything. So yeah, that's spot on.
Awesome. Well, to our audience, if you want to check out any of the references that we've cited during the episode today, check our show notes. And we hope you'll join us next time as we discuss whole person systems to get new results. Make sure to like and subscribe to Change Starts Here so you know when it drops. Take care.
Take care.